My name is Ryan Miller, and I've spent the last 15 years helping hundreds of people just like you to raise millions of dollars for their funds and for their startups. I am on a mission to help investors and founders to create new jobs, extreme wealth, and the dream life they deserve. Join me as we peel back the curtains and explore fresh ideas and dynamic personalities as we all move toward our dreams of making billions. Let's get into it. In this week's episode, I have my dear friend Tui Martin. Tui is the co-founder and CEO of Wellington Management Group, a $500 million real estate investment fund out of New Zealand. Join Tui and I as he gives you his five-step strategy on where to focus your time and energy to create an anti-fragile company and mindset. You don't want to miss it. Plus, Tui explains how he restructured his life and his mindset in his 20s to easily conquer the obstacles and seize the opportunities needed in his pursuit of making billions. Here we go. Hey, welcome to another episode of Making Billions. I'm your host, Ryan Miller, and today I have one of my very best friends, Tui Martin. Tui is the co-founder of Wellington Management Group out of Wellington, New Zealand. It's a conglomerate real estate group of companies that's grown into this $500 million behemoth. So, Tui, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having me on. It's been great seeing your previous podcasts and what you've been doing. Yeah, totally support what you're doing here. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you. You're very kind. It's a wonderful compliment, and your energy is certainly added to the many that have come before you. So, Tui, my understanding, maybe you can walk us through, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into this game. For many of our listeners around the world who may be thinking real estate is right for them, I'd love to kind of just paint your picture, your story. Yep. And, you know, kind of bring us up to speed. So you started when you were probably 2 years old. I don't know, but you'll get into it. So maybe bring us and our listeners up to speed. You know, how did you even get into this industry, let alone grow it to this $500 million behemoth we know today?
Yeah. So I came from obviously a poor background. And, you know, I'd always wanted to make money. To be rich. And sure. As I was through primary school and through my college years, I saw a book at the age of 12. And it said that 90% of millionaires become so by real estate. So I thought, okay, I should head into the real estate industry. And but I didn't know how. Ended up doing a degree in business computing.
Okay.
And I didn't like it. I didn't like computing or anything like that.
Yeah.
I still had in the back of my mind I wanted to be in real estate. One day my mum called me and said that my uncle wanted someone to help with his construction company in Auckland,
New Zealand. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that was the point where I thought, okay, that's real estate for me.
Yeah,
and I went ahead with it, ended up in Auckland, and started to do commercial and residential construction, hands-on.
Yeah,
with a builder's belt, concrete trucks, and I was managing a team of around about 40 people at the time.
Wow.
And, so that's how it started.
Yeah.
I didn't really know how I was going to get in there, but, yeah, through my uncle, I ended up in my first stages of real estate.
Excellent. So, yeah. And while you were there, so you started right literally from the ground up, pun intended. Yep. Yes. So you worked the ground, you did the work, you did the construction. I didn't see in young Tui Martin there swinging his hammer. So so you started there and that, so understanding how to build properties. So you really got a front row seat to the actual projects level. So how do you go from just a young guy swinging a hammer to start to understand the business of real estate? So you understand the construction side. How'd you get into the business side? Where did that begin for you?
Yeah, so I spent 3 years doing the construction on residential and commercial buildings, high-rises. And during that phase, I met quite a few people in regards to developers, housing companies. And I wanted to know more about that side. So what happened was that I went to the seminar about a real estate company that was selling huge subdivisions of land, and they were looking for someone to sell to spec builders. So I decided to knock on the real estate's door and say, here I am, is there a job for me?
Yeah.
And that was quite hard to do. I got introduced to the boss. He liked how I, you know, just knocked on the door and asked for it, and he ended up giving me a trial. And I ended up selling, you know, hundreds of sections to builders because of the building background. I knew what the builders were looking for. I knew the costs there. And that helped me get on with quite a number of builders.
Yeah.
And so I ended up designing houses with the builders to put on these sites. And, I had to make sure that they sold.
Yeah.
So once I started to advertise, I understood the market a bit more. We started to build to the market, and then, you know, that just took off. And
yeah.
Through that, I became the top New Zealand project marketing agent for the First National Group. And, so that's roughly how I got into that side on sales.
Okay, so you go from construction, you nail it on that, so to speak. Yep. Yeah, the puns, the dad jokes will be here all day. So you nail it on the construction, then you get into sales, you understand how to land, how to package deals on the sales side. And so that was your introduction to more of the business aspect of land development, real estate, and so on.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep. And that made me understand, obviously, finance, because from that point, I realized real estate is finance.
It is.
But I didn't know it at the time. So I went into this whole new world of finance, doing construction finance, new housing finance, investment finance, and had to understand valuations, making sure that they valued up for our clients, and went from there.
Okay. Perfect. And so you go from now sales, you understand finance. Where did it go from there?
So from that point, I started to develop myself, because once I saw how it worked, I started to build houses. And during that time, you get to understand what locations to build in, the supply and demand chain, and that grew very well in Auckland. So that was that next phase. So I then started to move there.
Yeah. You spread your wings. You went out on your own.
Yeah.
Now, you and I, we've known each other for a little while now, and I've gotten to know you. And, you know, I would love to talk about now, while that's what everyone else saw, I'd love to talk about what they don't see. What's going on in the inside? What is that driving force? So here you are, you read a book and you're like, okay, odds are good that real estate is the place where for me to build wealth. That was something that you just knew was the path or the calling for you early on. And opportunities started coming to continue down that path. But I want to maybe just sidestep that for a second. And let's talk about young Tui and some of those lessons that you learned at a young age through family and through your upbringing in New Zealand and your culture. Yeah. Maybe you can walk us through some of young Tui and some of those driving forces, those messages, those influences that you were able, fortunate enough to absorb. And we can talk about how those internal motivating factors drove you to the success that you're enjoying today. So could you walk us through some of those early moments in your life that has really shaped you into the man you are today?
Yeah, that's a good question, Ryan, because, you know, a lot of people know the business side. There's a lot of information and books out there, you know, step-by-step guides, but internally is where it starts. And for me, when I was young, around 4 or 5 years old, I used to spend the holidays with my grandmother.
Yeah.
And she used to always tell me this saying, don't let anyone tell you that you can't do something. That's always been in me. So when things got difficult or things were uncertain, always heard my grandmother's voice, and that's played an important role in my journey, because in life there's a lot of unknowns that come. And you need this inner voice to be able to get over that. And so that came from my grandmother. And then as I was going through, you know, as things got harder, you wanted to make sure, you know, that you saw obstacles coming. So that was a whole new learning curve for me. I realized you had to learn about the environment you're in. And so that was, a big driving force for me.
So your grandmother's voice, you've heard that. You had that influence at a young age, and that is beautiful advice. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do something. And, you know, you use that when times got hard or right, or just challenged, you had to figure stuff out, all the above. When growing in, you know, as the saying goes, the man at the top of the mountain didn't fall there, right? Like, it takes work to get to where you got. And some days are better than others, I'm assuming. But you had that intrinsic motivation. And in interviewing other guests on this show, I would say that's a very common trait for people who've made the successes that you and others have, is there was something deeper. It was they were driven by an impact or an influence or something internal. Would you agree?
That's right. I think, learning about yourself through hard times is one of the most challenging things that you can learn.
Yeah.
And so as I moved through, I realized that there's going to be tough times coming.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't ready for that. And when it does arrive, it's too late.
Yeah.
So you need to really look deeper into what's coming.
Yeah.
And that has helped me enormously in what I do.
Incredible. Now, speaking of hard times, so here you are, you've been hustling, you've been working hard, and this is something I want our guests to hear from you. A challenging in the moment, that was a scary moment for you when you were 26 years old. It puts you in a place that you'd rather not have been, but it also opened your understanding, your eyes a little bit more of what really were your priorities, and you shifted. Can you maybe walk us through what led to this pivotal moment when you were 26 years old, wound you up in the hospital. Walk us through what was going on, both physically, but also in your mind and your heart.
Yeah. So, when you start to make money in your early 20s, all you see is money and you want to make more of it. Your career is important. And I worked way too hard. I ended up being 106 kg.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking after my body. I wasn't eating properly. And I didn't think that was important. I was just after money, money, money.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of young people today like that. It's just money, and they forget about themselves. So, I ended up in hospital at the age of 26. I had the blood pressure of a 40-year-old at the time.
Yeah.
And, I realized then that what I was doing wasn't working.
Yeah.
I had to relook at everything. And, my background, I'm part Māori here in New Zealand, and we have a place called a marae where our family, our extended family, all come together.
Yeah.
And so my parents, after coming out of hospital, thought I should go back home, because home is where it's your end.
Yeah.
And so I went back to the marae and I talked to a nanny there. I didn't actually want to go home. I just wanted to get back out and work.
Start more. Making money. Yeah.
Money.
So to speak. Even though I put you in the hospital, it's not that the pursuit of money, there's anything wrong with that. It was how you were pursuing money, I think, is the issue. This is the important part. So, please continue.
So I went home and my nanny met me at the marae and said to me, look, your parents are worried about you. They don't want you to go back into hospital. they thought it would be a good idea for me to talk with you. And I had no idea what my nanny was going to say.
You knew something was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she said to me, look, I'd like to tell you about people that have come before you, family that have come before you, striving for the same thing.
Yeah.
So she took me to our family cemetery. And that's where it hit me, where she showed I had uncles and aunties that were on the same pursuit that I was on, but didn't make it. Mm. They actually passed away very early, between the ages of 35 to 50.
It's young.
And that really hit home to me because I could feel it. I was walking through the family cemetery. I could see it before my very eyes. And I knew my uncles and aunties very well, and I didn't see that side. And
yeah.
My nanny was trying to explain to me, look, this here we don't want happening to you.
Yeah.
And, that shook me a bit because I didn't read a book or anything about things like this.
Yeah.
And so then my nanny said, look, but the good thing is that you have uncles and family that have done well. And they are also lying in the family cemetery. So she explained to me about how they did it.
Yeah.
And that family's important. You've got to keep your children together. You've got to make sure your health is right. You've got to make sure your wife supports you in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And because at the end of the day, you're going to be lying here in the cemetery at the end of what you do as well. And your story needs to be told in a way that will help the next generation of the family, because that's what your life is about. This is where you're going to end up. So that was a huge eye-opener for me.
Mm-hmm.
It made me see that the path that I was previously on mm-hmm. was just all about me.
Yeah.
It's just all about money. And, so from that point, I realized I had to do something that would help me, my family, and my people.
Yeah.
And then expand from there. But I didn't know what it was at that time. But I definitely had a direction now, which was a huge eye-opener when I went back out into the world. And so I was looking. I was on a path to look at what I should do.
Yeah.
And so a year later, I ended up going to China, to Shanghai and Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing trip where, because I love real estate, I mean, if you go to Shanghai, there are skyscrapers that go out into the horizon.
Yeah, just an ocean.
Because real estate's my passion, I love skyscrapers. You know, the energy just shook inside me, and I could hear my grandmother again.
Yeah.
That if this could happen over there, like, you know, there are things that are possible.
Yeah.
And I realized that also in Shanghai, okay, I should be using everything that I've learned and known all the way up to this date, like construction, finance, selling, valuations, finance, and put that in all into a project that I love. That's how I found it. And that project represents me, my children, my people, and family. So that's what I'm about now. And that's one of the reasons why, after doing what I'm doing, from apartments to hotels to government leases, is now I'm on the path of the last side of things, which is the fund, to help me get to that very project. And that's helped me enormously in what I do, Ryan.
Yeah.
That's my driving force there.
That is powerful. So there was something I remember the late, great Stephen R. Covey, he talked about a similar principle, which was begin with the end in mind.
That's right.
You know, you've really opened my eyes to a real world example, and many of our listeners as well, is saying, wow, the power of really saying, what do I want this to mean? This being your life, your efforts, your work, your legacy, you know, not the nanny it sounds like when I'm listening to you that she really opened your eyes to say it's bigger than you, Tui.
That's right.
And you said, you know, I'm totally putting words into your mouth, but you said, you know, when I was starting, I was young, and by 26, I ended up in the hospital. I wasn't taking care of myself. I neglected so many things. My physical health is one of them, in the pursuit of making money. And again, pursuit of making money is not wrong, right? We're anyone listening to this kind of podcast is learning how to get their money right or more right. But what you're saying is there's just some things where it's not worth it. Yes, continue to pursue money, but learn how to do it in a healthy way is what I'm doing. Right. And what drives you is you've been very driven by a lot of significant emotional experiences. One being in the hospital to get your prime, made you second guess your priorities.
Yep.
But the other one was also someone walking you through a cemetery with your ancestors talking about your people and who loves you, who made it, who didn't. But either way, you're going to end up right here. So how do you want your story to be told to the next generation? That is so powerful. I'm getting goosebumps.
That was a huge eye-opener for me in my life after that meeting with my nanny, because I realized that out in the world, we don't really get to that point, and we're always in the pursuit of something.
Yeah,
we say it's for our family and our children, but there's no clear end.
Yeah, it never ends.
It was a clear end in the cemetery. It got way to that point.
That's a good point.
And so that helped me to reset what I was doing, to look at it in a different way.
Yeah.
And, you know, and by doing that, it helped me find the right people. Because there's a Māori saying in New Zealand that says, he tangata, he tangata, he tangata, which means it's about people, it's about people, it's about people.
Yeah.
And,
it's beautiful.
Because of that, my journey is about connecting with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to end up with my ancestors, my children are going to come to the cemetery, and it's all about people in there.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people get lost in this part.
Yeah.
But once you connect, you're away. You're on a mission that's much bigger than you, because you can see it and you can feel it.
And you did. I can feel it right now. So you mentioned now, you said you had, I believe, a purpose or a heading destination. After that experience, you finally, like you said, you're awake. You woke up and you said, okay, I know what this is all about now. I used to think it was just about making money, but that never ends. The only place that got me was in the hospital. What it is about blessing people's lives. There's something greater than myself. And would you say that was the pivotal moment that changed everything for you?
It did. You know, money is good, like you're saying.
Sure.
And once you get it, you can only really do so much.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, when you're doing houses, when you're traveling, when you're meeting people, when you're doing your passions and things, there's a lot more than that. Money can help you get to those things, but it's a lot more.
Yeah.
And when you pass that stage of what money can really do, you realize that, okay, you're definitely on the wrong path there.
Yeah.
And you know, you're right in that.
Yeah. And I think we talked about another quote from Stephen Covey. Was, I think he said something along the lines, I heard this many years ago, saying many of us climb the corporate ladder and reach the top only to realize we've leaned it against the wrong wall. And so to your point is to say, I climbed a short ladder. You know, it was okay when I was 26. I got to where I got to. But I realized in that moment that maybe the ladder I was climbing was not leaning against the right wall. And so I shifted to that. And now with that being said, I just want to, you know, pivot a little bit into this in this conversation. So now we understand, we're saying, you're driven by money. You kind of, you know, you knew what at least on the exterior part of your life, you knew what that was going to look like. You were going to be involved in real estate, and that was going to be your career and your skills. And then you started to mature and develop that internal drive that you needed in order to, you know, go from building a few houses here and there, selling some land, to truly build what you've built today. So moving forward in that conversation, you mentioned you're starting a fund, which is, you know, the show's about funders and founders.
Yeah.
And you are both. You're both a founder and a funder within the real estate sector. And I know you invest in small businesses here and there, but mostly you're focused on real estate. So going to, you went to Shanghai, you saw this sea of skyscrapers and you're like, that's it. I'm going to build me a skyscraper. That is so good. I could just hear your grandmother's voice saying, don't let anybody tell you you can't do it. Right.
That's
so, and you also started, and while that is cool, and when we can get into that, I think what's really cool, at least to me, is you started something called the New Zealand Social Housing Fund. Can you walk me through a little bit about, you know, just tell us, what is that? Why did you even do something like that? What are you hoping to get out of that? So walk me through and paint that picture for me.
So after the 2008 crash, I learned a lot about what I didn't see.
Mm.
And what I didn't see is I couldn't see the future well enough.
Ah.
So I went out to learn these skills about economics and finance a bit more in detail and cash flow. So what I was doing from 2008 was now learning about preparing for the next one, because I realized another one's coming. So what we were doing, we were looking at real estate and hotels, but, you know, the normal hotel only had a room and an ensuite in it, mm-hmm. but no kitchen. So what we did by moving into hotels, we started to install kitchens. The reason why we did that is that if the next crash came, we were able to flip the hotel into long-term residential leases. And so from 2008, I was planning for the next crash.
Yeah.
And also understanding the cash flow side of things. But obviously 2 years ago, COVID hit. And you know, it was actually, I thought it was going to happen in 2018, but, you know, I had to hang in there and wait, and I just had to wait in their patience until it did.
Yeah.
But COVID is like a financial crash. So what we did is that we already had the plan for that. We just flipped the hotels and apartments directly into long-term leasing. There was no stress there.
Yeah.
Because we knew what to do.
Right.
Which we didn't in 2008. So, but there was also an opportunity is that if I looked in the next 5 years, I could see a lot of unemployment. I could see a lot of printing of money, inflation going up. So I had to look at, okay, our current financial models that we had didn't really have a solution for COVID. So I dug deep into that part of the model and I thought, okay, who is going to have money while going through another event like this? And it's usually the government and also banks. So that's why we turn to long-term government leases, at least 10 to 20 years. That way I could position the company where the cash flow was consistent and predictable, because, you know, we get pitched a bit about, you know, developments where you've got corporate tenants and, you know, 12-month leases and things like that. And there was always flaws in there. There was no guarantee longer than 5 years.
Yeah.
So New Zealand Social Housing Fund is a fund that is linked with the New Zealand government via community housing providers on leases of 10 to 20 years. And we thought for the company to hold out for that long, we needed to be close to government.
Yes.
And so that's why we've pivoted that way. And it also helps the people that are unemployed in New Zealand. So it's a good cause. We're actually providing housing for that area of the market.
For homeless, is that right?
For homeless.
Yeah.
For social housing.
So the most vulnerable people in your society, among your people, and my understanding, it's the homeless rate right now in New Zealand is frighteningly
high.
Do you know, do you have any numbers on what that is?
Yeah. So there's 25,000 people waiting for a home right now.
25,000?
Yeah.
That's like a whole city by itself. So not only do you have this so you had this idea to say, okay, from a business standpoint in protecting my business and my investors and partners, during the next downturn, the only safe people were the government. So let's get close to the government, which is really a flight to safety. So let's start building those relationships. You said you started in 08, so you've been doing this for a while. And your idea is to say, all right, you know what? Driven by your inner purpose, that story that will be told to your ancestors, you say, okay, we're going to start a social housing fund. We can turn these into long-term leases, get the government to lease these properties, and the tenants will be some of the most vulnerable people in my country. Is that right?
That's right. That's right, which is my people.
Yeah.
Majority of my people are in that housing shortage.
Yeah.
So that resonated with me. And so with the voice of my grandmother and going to back to the marae, it all was in that direction.
Yeah.
It worked. And so, and it also helped to do the fund for the main project that I'm doing. So it all aligned.
Yeah.
And so that's where the drive and the pivot went to, because it's all linking.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So doing some good, honoring your ancestors and your people, while making billions. I believe that is truly admirable what you're doing. Truly. And you learned, you know, the hard way. We learned one way or the other that money is a means, not an end. And so when you figured that out, that was the moment where you really started making more money. As ironic as that was, when you were no longer directly obsessed with making money, but more fulfilling your mission, that's when, you made money. Sure, absolutely you did. But it was to the scale that you have, you did that when you had a mission, you had a destination. And, you know, you and I've, we've spoken, and, you know, you've taught me a lot of principles as well of going through, you know, some of your tips and pointers that have helped you. I'm wondering if you have any of those, that you would love to share with, some of our listeners.
So, the main thing is that you got to know the destination. You got to know where you're going. If you don't, you're going to always end up being lost or jumping from one career to another. So destination is definitely important here. So the second thing is that you need to be honest with yourself about, can you solve problems that are coming?
Yeah, like the obstacles.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because there's many obstacles always coming. It's like the ocean. The waves just keep coming, and you got to dig deep into the obstacles of your destination. And some people don't like to look at these obstacles.
Yeah.
They want to leave it to chance. And usually these obstacles are the ones that destroy the destination. So digging deep into understanding that, you need to be honest with yourself.
And also anticipating what those obstacles are too. I mean, you've taught me that to say it's not enough to know. You have to anticipate and prepare. And the most challenging obstacles, you've shared that with me, is something that I've learned from you, is saying the hardest one to address but also see is when the obstacle is yourself. I remember you taught me that one. And so working on yourself, anticipating your own weaknesses or challenge, whatever it is, like whatever that might be, and working and anticipating to kind of, you know, smooth out those rough edges would also be.
That's the hardest part. It sounds logical to do, to look at the obstacles, but that obstacle is usually you. It's usually you that's the obstacle. And
sure.
You have to be honest with what your weakness is.
Yeah.
Because your weakness is what you need to lean on.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't come out there, that obstacle is going to hit hard.
Yeah.
And so that's probably the second thing that is extremely important.
It also creates...
The next one is that you need to understand time to your destination.
Ah, yes. So tell me about that. About time. No, you're good. Tell me about time.
That's right. Yeah, so with the third thing is that you need to understand time to your destination.
Yeah.
Too many people are in a rush.
Yeah.
They want to get there tomorrow. And
that gets you in the hospital.
Because that's right.
That's where it gets you. When you're rushing it. Yeah, when you don't appreciate the time. I've heard it said, I don't know who originally said it, but most people overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in a decade. I believe that was Bill Gates, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, that's right.
Fact checkers will keep me honest on the internet. But it's so true you think you're going to be making billions in a year. Well, yeah, sure. Maybe there are people who can pull that off, but for, the vast majority is saying, don't overestimate what you can do in a year. Honor the role of a beginner and learn the lessons, work on your second point, which is your obstacles. And that tends to create what I like to call, and there's a book on this, an anti-fragile company, an anti-fragile state of existence, which just means when there's pressure put on a system, not only does it rebound, but it rebounds back stronger. And so anticipating and following these things is not only going to help you create that entity, whether that's yourself and or your business, but it helps you to grow and expand from those stresses.
So, that's right.
And so inspiring.
With the obstacles about knowing yourself, is time, because your weakness, if there is it there, you need to learn it, and that takes time.
That's a good point.
So it extends out your time to that destination. So if you don't see it, you're going to be in a rush. So that's why time's important.
Yeah. And when you're in a rush, you tend to maybe make judgments or decisions that you had no business making, or, you know, mistakes can happen, I think is.
Yeah. And so the one that's the real killer is, because of this time pressure and rush and not seeing the obstacles, is your own personal cash flow. Your ability to hold it out.
Yeah.
Because when you're restricted with your living costs and cash flow, you want to get there faster. So cash flow and holding that together is extremely important for you to manage what you need to learn, how much time you need to give yourself, and to limit the mistakes and decisions that you're going to make. So that cash flow is extremely important to keep stable.
Yeah.
And to keep mentally focused on your destination.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen like where it ties into, at least in my mind, this you hear about abundance mentality and shortage mentality. And where there's lack or shortage, you see war, you see crime. It's which is, maybe we'll summarize that to say, a lot of bad decisions are being made by a lot of people. And so when you're in that shortage, and especially with cash flow, which you said is one of the real killers, not only can it crush your dreams, but it can also warp your sense of identity and what you're okay with and what you're not okay with, your values, which then ultimately affects your destination, your vision, your mission. That can go right down the toilet. If your cash flow is not where it needs to be, you don't have your money right, you're making poor decisions. Yeah. Pretty soon you're no longer on that path that you feel called to follow. Is that a fair summary? I'm pulling that out of you. Okay.
Yeah, it is, because
it's brilliant.
It's your rush to get there. And, you know, what you're really rushing to is trying to get your cash flow up.
Yeah. Yeah, let's be honest. You're right.
You know, so you need to make sure that it's stable for you to get to that destination. But I don't think people focus enough there. And this is what makes the mistakes.
Yeah.
Because you're rushing the decision. So, so that's cash flow. Now, I think the main point that we discussed, Ryan, was your family unit. This to me is the ultimate that needs to be in line for you to do anything.
Yeah.
A lot of people are out there doing business and forget about family. For me, family is what keeps you going. Family is permanent. Business is temporary.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with family, you know, your partner, your wife needs to be with you.
Yeah.
And a lot of people neglect this very point. And with me, I wouldn't have got here without my wife beside me, because you need her through your tough times.
Yeah.
That's why number two, understanding the obstacles.
Yeah.
Your savior is your home unit.
Yeah.
Not going out and drinking, not going out and doing drugs and all these things, you know? So and you end up with more mistakes if you start doing that. But you got to come back to your home unit to reset and to get back up and to keep moving.
I love that. And, you know, I'm just understanding it now, but I agree wholeheartedly. And same thing, my spouse has been absolutely extraordinary. And in this, as I'm listening to you, I'm picturing this virtuous cycle. Is to say, you know, look, you got business and there's ups and downs. There's all seasons, all four seasons in business. But when winter comes or the down cycle, the downturns, those obstacles, whatever it might be, we know it's not if, it's when. And when they come, if you've already put, this is the lesson I'm learning from you. If you've already put your family on the sacrificial altar to make money, for example. So yeah, you're making money, but are you doing it the right way? Well, I don't know. Some would argue that's not the way I would make it. So you put your family on the sacrificial altar, right? You're too busy to read it to your kids, whatever it is. And then the hard times come, you go back to your family for the strength and it's not there. You've neglected those foundational important things, which is also building that story that you thought about it all those years earlier, is to say, how will you be remembered? And so then you don't have the strength to go and from home base. So then you go back, try to solve the problems, and you're now trying to solve problems at home and trying to solve problems in business. And what you're saying is make sure home base is strong. That is your source of strength. And by having that, then you go to your business. And when the hard times come, again, same thing. You go back to your home base. You're re-strengthened. You're re-fortified. You got a great spouse. You've done those things. And with that renewed strength, you go back to your business. You give it all you got. And it's that virtuous cycle that all comes from ensuring that your home base, where your heart and soul is properly cared for. Is that a fair assumption? Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. That's a beautiful message.
In the family cemetery, I mean, my family's coming back home to me.
Yeah.
And to make that happen, you've got to take care of them.
You do.
Else, what's the point of doing what you're doing? So that's why the family unit is extremely important. Not only that, your children see you going through good and bad times.
Yeah.
And they grow stronger as you keep going through them. Yeah. So you're actually making your children stronger.
Yeah.
And so you want to go back there to make them understand as well.
Wow. And that's part of your legacy, I would argue, are your children and the lessons that you give them.
That's right.
So, we've covered a lot of ground. So, you know, what would be, you know, if you couldn't leave your kids, maybe we'll give you this final question. You couldn't leave any of your money to your kids when you die. So it's your turn to return back to your own ancestors. But all you could do is leave the principles of how to make it. What advice would you leave your kids in place of your money?
Yeah, to make sure you come back to me in the family cemetery with your story, because I'll be listening.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, that's incredible. That's a good story. So, you know, to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed our time together as much as I did. So begin with the end in mind, find a deeper purpose, know your destination, anticipate your obstacles, appreciate the time that it takes to get things done, get your cash flow right, and ultimately make sure your home base is good. You do those things and you too will be well on your way in your pursuit of making billions.
Wow, what a show. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to leave a comment and review on new ideas and guests you want me to bring on for future episodes. Plus, why don't you head over to YouTube and see extra takes while you get to know our guests even better. And make sure to come back for our next episode where we dive even deeper into the people, the process, and the perspectives of both investors and founders. Until then, my friends, stay hungry, focus on your goals, and keep grinding towards your dream of making billions.